I would invite you to turn with me to Acts chapter 16 as we read verses 1 through 15 this morning. And as we think about living the adventure, in the Pew Bible it is found on page 963. Acts 16, 1 through 15. Paul went on also to Derbe and to Lystra, where there was a disciple named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer. But his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the believers in Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and had him circumcised because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. As they went from town to town, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in the faith and increased in numbers daily. They went through the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia. When they had come opposite Mysia, they attempted to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. So passing by Mysia, they went down to Troas. During the night, Paul had a vision. There stood a man of Macedonia pleading with him and saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." When he had seen the vision, we immediately tried to cross over to Macedonia, being convinced that God had called us to proclaim the good news to them. We set sail from Troas and took a straight course to Samothrace, the following day to Neapolis, and from there to Philippi, which is a leading city of the district of Macedonia and a Roman colony. We remained in this city for some days. On the Sabbath day, we went outside the gate by the river, where we supposed there was a place of prayer. And we sat down and spoke to a woman who had gathered there. A certain woman named Lydia, a worshiper of God, was listening to us. She was from the city of Thyatira, and a dealer in purple cloth. The Lord opened her heart to listen eagerly to what was said by Paul. When she and her household were baptized, she urged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come and stay at my home." And she prevailed upon us. We've come here today to recognize our soon-to-be high school graduates. We come to share in their joy and their accomplishments, and to share with their families in the same thing. We also come here hoping to encourage them. But we're also here today to be challenged along with them as they begin a new part of their journey in this life, a part which they must travel and decide to take, but a part that they do not have to take alone. As they begin this journey, this new step, this new trip in their lives, we come here to pray for them as well. But we also come to think with them about not only their journey, but our own. If you think about it, if you've ever been on a trip, and most of us have been, any trip on which we embark has many turns and intersections that we must navigate. We have to make decisions along the way about which way to go, determined in large part by where we want to arrive and when we want to get there. Sometimes we make those journeys with family members who decide that they're going to take roundabout ways, and when we think we're going to get to our destination in 3 hours, 6 hours later, we arrive, having been places that perhaps we really didn't even care to go. In the movie The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy asks the Scarecrow for directions. And if you remember that scene, he asks her, "Well, where do you want to go?" And Dorothy replies, "I don't know." The Scarecrow responds to her, "Then it doesn't matter which direction you go, does it?" You know, many times we're not sure where we are going or where we want to go. Sometimes those decisions are difficult, especially when we graduate from high school and go to college and wonder, where are we going? By the way, most college students change majors at least twice before the end of their sophomore year. If you can get there to your junior year and know the plan, you're way ahead of the curve. But most change at least twice by the end of the sophomore year. Sometimes on a trip, we make decisions about a direction that we are going. Oftentimes, guys, if we're driving, it's because we don't want to stop and ask directions and admit that we're wrong, right? And while going that way, we may wonder, okay, what was in a direction we didn't choose? Especially if we get lost. In fact, we may not just wonder what we might have seen on that stretch of road. We might be rather upset, or we might be berated by someone because we took the wrong road. But it was a decision that we made and with which we must live as we move along. As you begin, young ladies, to navigate your way in this new era of your lives, you will hear many calls to go places and to do things. Many attempts to influence the direction that you might go. Whether short-term knee-jerk moments, hey y'all, let's go do, and fill in the blank. Let's just hope it's not one of those, hey y'all, watch this moments. Or long-term objectives. You will have many calls and many folks that will try and influence you in those directions. Some peers, some family members, maybe some even professors. I would give you some words from the noted minister, Leslie Weatherhead, as you face those decisions. And actually, they're words that each and every one of us can find important. He was asked at one point in time, what is the most important truth that has come to you in your public life? He thought for a moment and responded, I've been a minister for 40 years and I've learned just one thing. Life will truly work only one way, and that is God's way. End of quote. In the biblical passage for today, Paul and his traveling companions had many decisions to make on their missionary travels. In Acts 15, there had been a major council that had taken place, a Jewish Christian council, to determine what the essentials were for anyone, especially for Gentiles, to become Christian. You may or may not know that prior to that council, there were many who thought that in order to become a Christian, first a Gentile must convert to Judaism, practice the law, be circumcised, do the sacrifices, and then they could become Christian. But because of an incident that happened with Cornelius, the Roman centurion, and Simon Peter, the council was called to determine, okay, what happens? Because those Gentiles accepted Christ and they were baptized immediately. So this council is called and they determine the essentials, one of which is no longer circumcision. And so Paul and Barnabas, among others, set out together to share that message with churches around. The Apostle Paul especially had difficulty with churches in an area called Galatia, where there were some who still insisted that you first must become a Jew and then a Christian. A short time later, Paul and Barnabas come back, and Barnabas goes off with John Mark, and Paul takes Silas with him. And they begin traveling together. And they decide to go to Lystra, where Timothy, the son of a Jewish mother and a Gentile father, has become a believer. While they're there, Paul has a decision to make, especially in light of the council. And he makes the decision to go ahead and have Timothy circumcised because of his Jewish heritage, but also because of a large contingent of Jews in the area, though it's no longer a requirement. But rather, Paul does this, I think, also to show that Christianity is not disloyal to the laws of Judaism out of which it grew. And so given this important time, Paul made a decision. It was popular with some and unpopular with others. Yet he felt he had been led by God to do that. And it turned out to be a wise decision as Timothy traveled with him. He takes Timothy and Silas with him, and they travel around spreading the good news of the gospel. And even though Timothy is young, even Timothy shares that good news with others. He's allowed to teach folks what he has learned. Timothy had a decision to make, though. He had a decision as to whether to leave the comfortable environment in which he was, to leave his mother's and father's household, and to move out with Paul. He prayed, and we do know that eventually he traveled with Paul. And not only did he travel with Paul, but because of the decisions he made for God and the decisions he made in following, Paul would often send him to places to deliver messages for him. It's important to note that as they deliver these decisions, these dogmas, official declarations for the churches were strengthened in the faith and they grew. Those dogmas were to encourage those Gentile Christians to live lives distinguished from all the others around them. And so what I would say to you is, as God has called you in different ways to pursue different tasks, that you never leave Him behind, but rather you seek to live a life distinguished from others around you so that the gospel may be seen, even in the little things that you do. Now, as Paul and Silas and Timothy continue their trip into other areas, we read that at one point, Paul really wanted to go to a place called Bithynia, which was north of Galatia, north of where they were. He really wanted to. It was the desire of his heart. And yet, we're told that the Holy Spirit influenced him and kept him from going to Asia, and the Spirit of Jesus would not let them go into Bithynia. Paul had a decision to make. He could have given in to his urge to go on, because after all, he was Paul, the Christian missionary par excellence. But rather than putting himself first, he made the decision to listen to the Spirit of Christ and go where that Spirit led him. And that Spirit, through a vision one night, leads him to Macedonia. He took this as a message from God, and he and his entourage immediately leave and go to Macedonia. Paul listens to that message and makes the decision and takes the direction which is revealed to him, even in spite of the fact that he wanted to go somewhere else. For a colleague of mine, actually I was in seminary with Brad Chance, Dr. Bradley Chance notes, and I quote, "As we find ourselves in our present moment of life, it is sometimes useful to reflect on how we got where we are. To imagine where our lives would be if we had not made certain decisions at crucial moments in life. It is also sometimes enlightening and perhaps humbling to contrast our current position in life with what we had planned." In other words, as the joke goes, want to make God laugh? Well, then tell Him your plans. End of quote. We must seek to find where God is in our lives, especially when sometimes we may feel like we're stuck in a rut. We're seeming to get nowhere, whether in college or in life, and we wonder where we should go. Rabbi Ben Azai taught, "In seeking wisdom, thou art wise. In imagining that thou hast attained it, thou art a fool." Wisdom is something that we must always seek. And the wisdom of God is something that will not let us down if we continue to adhere to it and to listen to those calls. So one of the best pieces of advice that I could give you is to seek after that wisdom. And to seek after it in all ways. Plato, the philosopher, not the stuff that comes in a can. Plato speaks of perfect wisdom as having four parts. Wisdom, the principle of doing things right. Justice, the principle of doing things equally in public and in private. In other words, what you do publicly, you should also do in private. Fortitude, the principle of not fleeing danger, but meeting it prudently. And temperance, the principle of subduing your desires and living in moderation. Following those four principles of Plato will stand you well in seeking wisdom. In a May newsletter, I shared some things to remember that a colleague had listed a few years ago. And I want to share these again, the first 10, and then add some others to them. No one can ruin your day without your permission. Most people will be about as happy as they decide to be. Others can stop you temporarily, but only you can do it permanently. Whatever you're willing to put up with is exactly what you'll have. When your ship comes in, make sure you're willing to unload it. The best way to escape your problem is actually to solve it. Life's precious moments don't have value unless they are shared. He or she who laughs, lasts. Look for opportunities, not guarantees. Life is what's coming, not what was. And in addition to those 10, I would add several more from that list that he had. Success stops only when you do. You will never have it all together. Life is a journey, not a destination. Enjoy the trip. The biggest lie on the planet, when I get what I want, I'll be happy. I've learned that ultimately, takers lose and givers win. If you don't start, just for sure you won't arrive. We often fear the thing that we want the most. Yesterday was a deadline for all complaints. Move forward. Success is getting up just one more time. Now is the most interesting time of all. And finally, when things go wrong, don't go with them. Yet while these are appropriate words of advice for you and for all of us, there are others which Paul learned in his life and which we can glean from this passage in Acts. First, be aware that God has a plan, a purpose, and seek to be aware of what that purpose for you is. Second, be open to God's guidance. In Psalm 32:8, God promises, and I quote, "I will instruct you and teach you the way you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you." Jesus said that he will be with each one of us, even to the end of the age. But he also tells us to love God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind, and with all our strength. Next, be patient when doors close. That's one of the biggest ones for me. Be patient when doors close. We often want what we think we want when we want it. But God sees and knows the future. And God sees and knows what the future can be if we will but listen. We are urged to trust in the Lord and patience, which is a really hard thing to exercise. is one way we prove that we really do trust God. And fourth, be partners with God and God's people. I've often said that we are created not to be individuals unto ourselves, but we are social creatures meant to be together and to share life together. We are not meant to do things totally alone. We are not called to purpose in order to go it alone. Paul states that we are all parts of one body in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Another way we might put it is we're part of a symphony of life, and each one is an integral part of the whole. When working out God's purpose for our lives, we are to help each other, but we're also to accept the help that others might give us. So Abby, Rebecca, and Layla, life is an adventure. It can be a trip that ends up being like driving through the endless cornfields of Iowa. Or it can be like traveling through the Rockies or the Grand Canyon, filled with wonder. There will be moments where you will feel like you're trapped on that road with nothing but corn and corn and corn, and you wonder, is there ever going to be anything exciting to happen? But even that has its purpose. And if life, as that journey is lived in connection with God and with others around who will guide you well, it will always be purposeful and filled with anticipation of what you can do and how the world can be better. And so I say to you, live that journey. Live it well. And Godspeed as you travel forward. And as that same word is given to each of us, as we travel in our lives, perhaps maybe you have sometimes felt like your life is in a rut. By the way, a rut is nothing but a grave with both ends knocked out. Climb out. Seek that guidance. And then share the journey. Our closing hymn for this day, for this time of celebration, is number 682. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah. As we stand and as we sing, may that truly be the prayer of our hearts, that we will not only seek but accept His guidance. Hymn number 682, Guide me, O thou great Jehovah.